Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we're talking about the ability of one person to bring hope into the life of another. If you've ever wondered if you can make a difference in the life of someone who needs it, these stories are for you. First up, we have Kim Whitecamp, who shares an experience she had when she felt impressed to reach out in a simple way to a complete stranger. Let's join Kim now in the Appleseed studio with a personal story called Quest.
I was on the road for 2 weeks, and I was tired, but I was also getting excited because the next portion of my work took place in Virginia Beach, and I have friends that live there, and they are amazing. I love their company. They had to work, but they're like, look, you can have the house to yourself or do whatever you want. And I said, well, I know what I want to do. I want to go down to that strip of the beach. So I prepared myself for the beach. And because I burn, it is quite the undertaking to prepare. I slather myself like you're putting butter on a turkey at Thanksgiving. I mean, I had my muumuu and bathing suit cover up, and I have a hat. It is huge. It's like a flour tortilla meant a UFO. I mean, it's gigantic. And as I pulled into the parking lot, I noticed there was only one other car. And I slid in, and I put the window down and listened to the comings and the goings of the tide, the heartbeat of the earth, and just relaxed into it. I took the keys and dropped them in my lap, and I turned to put them in my bag, and that is when I looked into the truck. The wheel wells were eaten through with holes from the salty air. There was an unplanned two-tone paint job, and in the back, I saw the handles of, like, shovels and just some odd things back there, and in the passenger seat was a man, and he was sitting in the seat like a statue, staring straight ahead over the steering wheel, leaning forward a little bit. And he was just, it was palpable what I felt coming off of him. I knew he was not in a good place and not a happy guy. And I sat there and I thought, okay, you have planned this on this whole trip, that you were going to have this day to do what you wanted, to read your book, to sit on the beach and enjoy yourself. But now you're here alone, and there's a guy in a truck over there who is definitely not happy. What am I going to do? This is the beginning of, like, one of those Dateline shows. But you know what? I deserved that break. And I thought, you know what? I know what I'm going to do. So I got the bag, and I got the chair out of the back. I locked the car, and I got my phone out. I'm going to call my voicemail, and I'm going to walk very animated and look at my watch and talk, so that he'll see, oh, she's talking to someone. She's meeting someone here. Someone knows where she's at. And as I was walking away and getting ready to dial my phone number, I heard a voice. It's so interesting to me. That voice that resides in all of us, and we know it's not ours. And it was so clear, and it cut through all of my anxiety, all of my nervousness, through the beating of my heart. And I heard it as if it was spoken right here by somebody, almost as if the hair by my ear moved. I heard, talk to him. I didn't. Are you crazy? I'm not going to talk to him. I've built this whole crime show in my head by this point. And so I kept walking, and I called myself, and I started talking into my phone, and I was waving my arms and
found a place that was really good. I opened up the chair. I sat down, put my bags beside me, and leaned back. You know how it is when you stand under a sugared sky at night, or at the base of a beautiful mountain, or in front of a vast sea, we all wax philosophical. So there I sat, having all kinds of philosophical deep thoughts while looking over my shoulder to make sure he was not coming after me. Finally, I realized he wasn't coming. I was safe. As I began to read, it happened again, clear as a bell. I can sit here in front of you with all sincerity and say I can still hear the tone of that voice. Talk to him. And I was like, no, I'm not doing it. This is crazy. You know when you're tired and you're trying to read and you read a paragraph and then you have to stop and go, I don't even know what I just read, and you have to go back to the top? I kept doing that over and over, and I finally slammed it shut, and I was like, doggone it. And I dropped the book in the bank, and I thought, well, this is no fun because now it's in my head, so I'll make a deal, because isn't that what we do? I said, here's the deal. If he's there when I leave, if he's still in the truck, I'll talk to him. And so I leaned back and I thought, well, at least I can get some relaxation for a while. And the water was just starting to kiss my toes and I was enjoying it. And over the sound of the seagulls, I heard the voice again. Talk to him. Okay. I closed my chair and almost in a small tantrum, turned to head back, and he was there. He was standing at the end of the dock, right where I had just stepped off maybe 20 minutes ago. And his legs were spread, and he was planted, and his hands were in the pockets of his sweatshirt, and he was just staring out at the ocean. And I was like, well, don't you have a sense of humor? And so I trudged over to the dock, and I stood there, and he was really tall. And I was already down a foot because of the dock, an extra foot. And I looked up, and I said, hey, how are you? And without looking at me, he said, I'm fine, ma'am. Well, I did it. I talked to him, but I knew I should say a little more. And I said, no, really, how are you? And he said, I said, I'm fine, ma'am. I was like, okay. I did what I was supposed to do. I'm finished. I walked down the side of that little dock, hoisted myself onto it, and I began to walk when I heard the voice again, clear as a bell. It will pass. I didn't even have to think about what I was supposed to do. It was already there. It's almost like the voice carried with it silent directions that I didn't even have to think about. And I turned around and I said, hey. He turned around at me, kind of arced, his head tilted, his eyebrow furrowed from the interruption. And I said, it'll pass. And he said, excuse me, what? I said, it'll pass. Whatever you're dealing with right now, it is temporary and it will pass. I just feel like I'm supposed to tell you that. It'll pass. And he just stared at me. So I turn around, holding the chair and the bag, and I walked to my car. I reached in my bag, pulled out the keys, unlocked the car, threw the chair in the back, opened the front door, threw the bag on the passenger seat, got in, shut the door, locked it. I could hear the rushing, not of the ocean, but of my heart in my ears. Talking to strangers when you're scared and walking through sand can be quite the workout. I looked up and I could see him at the end of the dock like a small dot amongst the dry beach grass. I put the key in the car and turned it and thought, well, I guess that's it. And I didn't hear a voice this time, but I knew I was supposed to do more. So I got in my bag, I got out my wallet, I got out a card, and I thought, oh, you are opening a door? I mean, what are you doing? But I knew I was supposed to do it, and I tucked it right in the between the rubber and the window of his truck. And I got in the car, and a peace settled over me, just like whoo, more peace than I could have ever received by sitting on that beach enjoying myself. I went back to April and David's, went into the backyard, set up the chair, and I read, and I drank my water, and I ate my grapes. And when they came home, I told them what happened. They're like, wow, that's weird. And I'm like, you know, it is what it is. It was strange. But I'm happy I'm here and alive to tell the story. Well, I went home then, and 3 weeks later, my phone rang, and it was a Virginia Beach number. And I knew it was probably him. And as I held my phone in my hand, I looked at it and thought, open the door or keep it closed? Because I just didn't know what I was getting into. And I swiped and I said, hello. And he said, yes, ma'am. Is this the woman that talked to me at the beach? And I said, yes. And he said, oh, good. He said, I wanted to call you and tell you what was happening. I said, okay. And he said, so your name's Kim, and I know that. He said, but my name is Quest. And I said, seriously? He said, yes. I'm like, well, that fits this just perfectly. And he said, they call me Quest. And he said, here's what happened. He said, I woke up that morning and he said, I'm married. He said, I've been married for 7 years and we had a new baby boy recently. He's beautiful. Everything I do is for my family. He said, I actually own a boat detailing company. I detail boats all around Virginia Beach. He said, thus the truck. And he said, but that morning, my wife told me that that little boy probably wasn't mine. He said, my whole world, my whole world disappeared. He said, that little boy, I love him so much, and he's probably not mine. He said, that's what happened that morning. And he said, when I was sitting in the truck, I kept saying, how do I do it? Do I just walk in? Are my boots heavy enough? Do I just go in without my boots and swim until I cramp up and just, you know, how do you do this? I'd never thought about it before. And he said, as I sat in that truck, I said to myself, if you want me to live, you need to tell me. And I didn't hear one thing. And he said, I knew sooner or later you'd be leaving the beach. So I went out to the edge of the dock and I decided I'd stand there and wait. And then when you were walking down the dock, you said, it'll pass. I said, I remember. And he said, I stood there thinking, how does she know? Because you said it's temporary. It'll pass. It'll pass. And he said, how did you know? I said, I didn't know. I said, I kept hearing that I was supposed to talk to you. And that's the words that I was given. He said, well, you left. And he said, I watched you leave the whole way. And I kept watching the parking lot, just computing what had just happened. And so I went back to my truck. I went to my pastor's where I'd not been in years. And I cried until I threw up. And he talked me through it. And I said, well, I'm really proud of you. I'm happy to hear from you. And he said, I would love to meet you. I said, I would be fine with that. I said, as a matter of fact, and I told him the dates, I was actually going to be back in Virginia Beach. I said, my daughter's coming with me. She's traveling with me. And so I would love to meet you. And he said, great. So we planned to meet at a coffee shop. We picked the coffee shop. And my daughter and I arrived early so we could kind of get our seats and feel it out. And he walked. That door flew open. He scanned that place and he threw his arms wide and he goes, there she is, my angel. He walked over. I stood up. He gave me a huge hug, pumped my daughter's hand, said it was so good to see me and sat down. And I said, look, I am so happy to see you. I'm so thrilled. And I said, but I need to tell you something. I'm not an angel. I said, please don't call me that. And he said, why? I said, buddy, I am just a reluctant human. I did not want to talk to you. I said, it was four or five times that I was told to talk to you. And I said, no, I deserved that time. I deserved that break. I had my plan. I knew what I wanted to do. You were an inconvenience. And I said, I have to tell you something. I was really scared of you and I'm sorry. I said, you know, it just didn't look like a good situation going on with you. And I was scared of you, and I apologize. He reached across the table and took my hand, and he said, it's okay. He said, I was scared of you too. I said, what? And he said, have you seen yourself in that hat?
Lost keys, spilled coffee. Traffic's backed up on the highway. The phone won't stop ringing. It's just another day. The best laid plans are just a misfire. Tiptoeing on a tight wire. It's a heavy price to pay for just another day. Gotta get my feet back where they belong. Find that note that is my favorite song. Point my feet the right way and live. And live. A little song for Quest.
That was Kim Whitecamp with a story called Quest, together with a nice musical treat from Kim. Kim has such a great voice. We love it when she comes and sings to us in the Appleseed studio. You never know what's going to bring up a memory, and you never know what memory it's going to bring up. And perhaps unusually, listening to Kim's story about a simple act that made all the difference for someone in need brought up a kindergarten memory for me. I wasn't very old in kindergarten. I was 5, same as you. But 5 years old wasn't too young to already begin to wonder about your place in the world, to feel sometimes like you weren't as good as the other kids in your class at one thing or another, or maybe at everything. And my kindergarten teacher must have sensed that I needed a little boost. Her name was Miss Gaydon, and Miss Gaydon knew I liked to draw things, and she encouraged me to enter a drawing into a contest for all the kids in my elementary school. The idea of the contest was to draw a picture that illustrated what you might do in case of an emergency. And the prize awarded to one winner in each grade was a first aid kit presented by the volunteer fire department. Well, I would never have had the confidence to enter a drawing into that contest on my own. I liked to draw, but I really wasn't very much as an artist, truth be told. That's how it is even now. I like to draw, but I'm not very much as an artist. Miss Gaydon, though, kept encouraging me. And so I took a big sheet of manila craft paper from the kindergarten shelf, and I got my crayons out of my desk, and I drew a line down the center of the paper. And on one side of the line, I drew a stick figure that represented me. And in the picture, I was standing on a chair and dialing a phone that was hanging on the wall. And on the other side of the line, down the center of the paper, I drew a stick figure wearing a big red fireman's hat. And the man in the fireman's hat was answering my phone call. That's what I figured I'd do in an emergency, call the fire department. And you know what? I won the contest in the kindergarten category. And the volunteer fire department came and gave me that big red plastic first aid kit. And the local newspaper published a picture of me and the other winners from the other grades, each of us standing together with our teachers. It was a tiny, tiny win, maybe, for me in a tiny, tiny town, in a tiny, tiny school when I was just tiny. But for me, it was enormous. And while it wasn't the only thing that Miss Gaydon did to turn my thoughts about being an elementary school student in a hopeful direction, it is the only one I have a photo of. And while it wasn't the only time I'd need an infusion of hope from a teacher or a family member or a friend or even a stranger, it was enough hope to live on for a good long time. Maybe elementary school was going to be okay. And that's where Kim's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along? There's a lot coming up, but I want to take just a moment and tell you about another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show. Now, life can be stressful, but Lisa Valentine Clark, the host of The Lisa Show, along with her guests and her unique council of moms, provide a positive and empowering look at all kinds of challenges. They tackle them head on, sharing experiences, offering suggestions on how we can handle relationships and health and technology and body image and family, all kinds of stuff. And Lisa is a great person to hang out with. The Lisa Show, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio. We're so glad to have you with us today on The Appleseed. And up next, we have a story from Paul Strickland. It's a story about Jack and the help Jack gets to find hope in a tough time. And he gets that help from his best friend, who is a bull. Now, Paul Strickland's stories tend to be filled with wordplay, new ways to look at
turns of phrase or familiar figures of speech. It's part of what makes Paul's stories delightful. And this story is called Jack and the B-Side. Now, that's a play on words, too. A play on words that you'll get if you ever bought a song on a vinyl 7-inch record. Chances are you bought the record for the song on the front side, the A-side, but turn the record over on the B-side, and there was always another song there. Everybody knew those A-side songs. They were usually the hits you could hear on the radio. But songs on the B-side often became favorites in their own way, too. And there's a bit about that in this unusual fairy tale written and performed by Paul in the Appleseed studio. Here's Jack and the B-side on the Appleseed.
Well, so let's do a story that is one of those newfangled fairy tales, these reupholstered folk tales. My actual grandpa, the one not that I made up, but the one that kind of ultimately made up me, right? My actual flesh and blood grandpa. My actual flesh and blood grandpa, he grew up in Harlan County, Kentucky, where Jack tales were collected there in Harlan County, Kentucky. And so he grew up with all of these Jack tales. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience before, but whenever you read an old, old story like that, a fairy tale, sometimes you just cannot pull yourself away from it. And you can't figure out why you are so compelled by it. But I'll tell you why you're so compelled by it. Because the story's older than you are, and it knows some things about you that you don't know yet. And it's just waiting on you to figure it out. And that is what this story is. This is my reimagining of a story that a lot of people call Jack and the Bull, but my version I like to call Jack and the B-Side. A long, long time ago, there was a boy named Jack. And this was a long time ago. I mean, this was back before week-old news was an endangered species. This was back before basketball got invented, so giants had nothing to do back then but just cause a bunch of trouble up in the sky. This was back when there was a boy named Jack who had one friend, his bull. And Jack was the child of two very, very poor farmers. And he was one day just deliriously hungry, deliriously hungry. He walked up to his bull and his bull said, "Jack, you look deliriously hungry." And Jack thought to himself, "When did my bull start talking? I must be deliriously hungry." And Jack and the bull, they hung out all day. And at one point, Jack looked up and he saw that his bull's left horn was 6 inches off center of that right horn. And he said, "Well, bull, since you can talk, maybe you can answer me a question. Why is your left horn 6 inches off of the right horn?" And Jack's bull said, "Jack, you didn't know that you can unscrew the horns off of my head?" And Jack thought, "I must be deliriously hungry." So he reached up there and he started twirling that left horn. It went, finally, the bull pulled his head away and said, Jack, it's child safety threaded. It's like a pill bottle. You got to push it in first and then turn it." So Jack reached up there. He pushed it in. He turned it and he pulled. And inside of that horn was delicious, sushi-grade, raw, but perfectly edible ends meat. And he started eating that ends meat that his parents somehow could never make until Jack was no longer deliriously hungry. He fed some of it to the bull even, which might have been weird. And then he stuck it up there, pushed it in, turned it, and it clicked into place. And that bull's horns were back where they belonged. But then, of course, Jack could not stop staring at that right horn. So he walked around that bull to that right horn. He pushed it in. He turned it. And it came off and flop out of that right horn was the owner's manual for that bull that his parents had clearly never read. And this next part of the story, nobody ever believes me when I tell it. Jack read the owner's manual from cover to cover to find out what to do with that right horn. And here is what it said to do. It said to take that right horn and go into the woods and find a dark, muddy puddle. And then find yourself a stick. And then revolve that dark, muddy puddle around at 78 revolutions per minute. revolve that dark, muddy puddle around it, 78 revolutions per minute, and then take that horn, put the very tip of that horn just on the surface of that revolving puddle, and make yourself a DIY record player. And when he did that, this song came out. Come on, let's go up the road a ways. Got no bags to pack, I got no goodbyes to say. Our fortune's up ahead, even if it's sour. Even if our fortune is poor, at least it'll be ours. So come on, let's go one step at a time. 'Cause hopping would be a harder way to travel, and I'm already tired. And I'm underfed, so come on, let's go. Our fortune's up ahead. And if we find wishes, let's not waste them on stars. 'Cause where we are coming from, there's no telling if we're gonna make it that far. We're seeking our fortune, that's what we must pursue. But unless you are born with a fortune, then seeking one's the only thing that's left to do. So come on, let's go up the road a ways. Got no bags to pack, I got no goodbyes to say. Is geographical happiness real? It ain't clear, but happiness is, and man, it ain't here. So come on, let's go up the road a ways. And Jack wanted to hear the B-side, but he couldn't figure out how to turn the puddle over. So he hopped up onto his bull, and they walked and walked the path, inspired by the lyrics in that tune. And they walked for about 30 minutes or so. They walked for about 30 minutes or so before Jack said, "Are we there yet?" And Jack's bull said, "No, we are not there yet." Another 30 minutes or so went by before Jack said, "Are we there yet?" And the bull said, "No, Jack, we are not there. If it only took an hour to find your fortune, then this path would be stocked full of bulls and children." About 45 minutes went by, and Jack said, "Are we there yet?" And the bull said, "Don't make me turn myself around." But eventually, Jack matured, and he became a better traveling companion. And he and that bull had plenty of wonderful adventures together. Things seemed to be going so well. Things seemed like that. And one day, Jack and the bull, they were drinking out of a stream. And right where that bull had his lips in that stream, there was a bunch of blue bubbles began to pop up. And Jack backed up and looked, and the bull backed up and looked. But neither one of them said anything. Y'all have had that happen before, right? Where you felt like maybe you should say something to your friend, but you weren't quite sure what to say or when. So then Jack didn't say anything. And then later on that day, they were on the path. And up ahead on the path, there was a giant blue bull that was stamping its feet, and it was snorting, and it was staring right at Jack's bull. And Jack's bull said, "Jack, you got to get off of me." Jack said, "What is going on?" Jack's bull said, "You know them blue bubbles that were popping up earlier? That was a bad sign, Jack. Turns out there's a lot more blue in me than I realized. And now I've got to fight this blue version of myself. And if I don't make it..." And Jack said, "What do you mean if you don't make it, bull? You've got to make it. You're my best friend. You have to make it." And there was no more time for talking because that blue bull started charging. And Jack's bull and that blue version of himself locked horns, and they fought and they fought in that path. They kicked up so much dust, probably 30 minutes went by before finally Jack's bull won that battle. He won that battle on that day. And I wish I could tell you that this was the only time that Jack's bull had to fight that blue version of himself. This is a fairy tale. I wish I could tell you he only had to fight that blue version of himself three times. But the fact is, Jack's bull had to fight that blue version of himself in some way, shape, or form a little bit every single day. And things seemed to be going fine. Things seemed like that. But one day, they were drinking from another stream. And as they were drinking from the... And they both backed up and they saw just a brook full of blue bubbles. And Jack's bull said, "Jack, I don't think I'm going to make it." And Jack said, what do you mean you're not going to make it? You have to make it. You're my best friend. You have to make it. And Jack's bull said, "Jack, just listen to me, please. If I don't make it, what I need you to do is take my right horn and take the two black spots off my hide when you go." And Jack said, but you are going to make it, right, bull? Promise me you're going to make it. And Jack's bull said, "When you find wishes, go on and reach for the stars. Because a child like you, Jack, there is no telling how far you could go. So just keep going. One day your fortune will appear. I wish I could see it all myself, but I have to close my eyes here." And the bull closed its eyes and fell down in the path and was gone. And just like y'all, I thought we were going to see some other battle. But the fact of the matter is, we don't see half of the battles. And after a little while, Jack walked over. He pushed in that right horn and he turned it and he took it off of that bull like he'd been asked. And he took those two black spots off of that bull's hide and he started walking up the path with them, crying. Started walking up the path, and after about 30 minutes or so, he thought to himself, "I wish I could give my parents a second chance." And just like that, he was back at the farm and he looked down in his left hand and there was only one black spot that remained. So Jack looked around and then he rolled up that black spot and he put it in his back pocket. As his parents came running out of the farmhouse, they were so excited to see him. They had no idea where he had been. And yeah, his parents had a lot of work to do, but they loved that boy. They were trying their best. And Jack wondered for a long time what to do with that last black spot, that last wish he had. Sometimes he thought maybe he should wish for all the gold in the world, but he thought no. Sometimes he thought he should wish to become the king of some huge fancy kingdom, but one day he knew exactly what he wanted to wish for. He reached in his back pocket, he pulled out that black spot, he closed his eyes, and he wished for his bull back. And when he opened his eyes, that black spot was gone. And there came Jack's bull, his best friend, walking back up that path. And yeah, this bull had two new horns. And yeah, this bull didn't talk anymore. But it was Jack's bull. It was Jack's best friend who was back. And Jack led his friend, that bull, into the woods where he had hidden that old right horn. And he found a stick and he revolved that old muddy puddle at 78 revolutions per minute. And he put that right horn to the edge of that revolving puddle. And he and his bull got to listen to the B-side. "Wherever you go, make sure you stay. 'Cause wherever you are in the world, it's a better place with you in it either way. Sometimes you'll feel wishless. You won't know what to do. Just remember the star you could be wishing on might be walking right next to you. So come on, let's stay. Let's see what happens next. The world is so much bigger than what you see in your reflection. Your fortune's up ahead. You know what to do. Come on, let's stay. I'll stay right next to you."
Paul Strickland with Jack and the B-Side.
Did you have a time ever in your life when things seemed tough for you? When it was difficult to find hope? What brought you out of it? Who said or did something that made you realize it was going to be okay? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. We might share them on the show. You can tag us on social media or send us a message at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. One listener named Joanne Gatti writes, "Now more than ever, we need storytelling. Sharing a story shows us the familiarity between ourselves and others." That's so true, Joanne. Thanks so much for sharing that comment. We loved hearing from Joanne, and we hope to hear from you, too. So reach out to us. Tell us what you think. We want to thank Kim Whitecamp and Paul Strickland for sharing their stories with us today. You've listened to their tales. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, and Brian Tanner. Assistant producers include Garrett Gunnell, Carrie Griggs, Kay Hendrickson, and Nico Wetzel. And our post team is Trent Reimschussel and DJ Cromarty. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcasts, Kaboom for original audio adventures, and Wink, stories for better bedtimes. All our podcasts can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the BYU Radio app or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, leave us a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on the Appleseed.